Welcome back to First Take. The Twins, Timberwolves, and Wild all postponed games Monday following the police shooting of 20-year-old Dante Wright, who was killed during a traffic stop in the Minneapolis suburb of Brooklyn Center Sunday night while attempting to arrest Wright on an outstanding warrant. A struggle ensued, and police say an officer intending to fire a stun gun accidentally fired a handgun instead. Wright's death has led to two nights of protests with officers in riot gear clashing with demonstrators. Yesterday, the Twins decided to postpone their afternoon game with the Red Sox after consulting with Major League Baseball. Both teams had taken the field to warm up, and the national anthem was played before fans were told the game was off. A few hours later, the Timberwolves and Wild called their games. NBA coaches Doc Rivers and Greg Popovich expressed their frustrations last night.
I just know the frustration is a real thing for everybody and for us. And, you know, you keep hearing this cancel culture stuff, but, you know, we're canceling Black lives. And I think, to me, that's a little, you know, more important, in my opinion. And we just, it just keeps happening. We keep making mistakes on killing Black people.
It just makes you sick to your stomach. You know, it's, how many times does it have to happen? And, you know, as sick to our stomachs as we might feel, that individual's dead. He's dead. And his family's grieving, and his friends are grieving. And we just keep moving on as if nothing's happening.
20 years old, unarmed. And yes, he's dead. Also a father there as well. That game that I mentioned that was postponed will be played tonight. The Nets T-Wolves, that'll be at 3 p.m. Central Time. On that note, we welcome in host, lawyer, commentator, social justice activist, Angela Rye. Angela, thank you so much for being with us this morning. What was your reaction to the actions taken by the Minnesota organizations?
Well, I appreciate their show of respect, but it's just not enough. I know there are many people wondering, even watching the program now, what can we expect for teams to do? And I think it is to meet the players in their pain, right? There are so many people in our communities that continue to be wrecked by this type of trauma. The fact that they're not just players who can shut up and dribble or shut up and pitch or just shut up, period, and realizing that this is someone that could have been their brother, that could have been their son, that could have been their cousin. It's a reality that is that continues to just be a pervasive problem in this country. We're talking about a shooting death that happened right 20 miles from where the Derek Chauvin trial is currently being held. There was all of this shift that was supposed to happen after George Floyd was killed last summer. And here we are, not even in a different state, not even hardly in a different city, with the same kind of issue. The issue that comes from white people seeing Black bodies as inherently violent and dangerous. The same foundation that is rooted in slave patrols is what makes people think they can hunt down Black bodies and shoot to kill. Sure, there's some folks that will believe the officer, who is also the president of the police union, that this was not an intentional act, that she thought she was grabbing her taser, but she was no rookie. She's no rookie on the force. She is no rookie at cover-ups of this type of behavior. She's actually helped other officers get out of accountability for shooting and killing another civilian. This is the type of issue that we're going to have to address at its root. And so when people start talking about defund the police or divesting resources from the police, this is why, because resources shifted in another area, even a different type of force that can handle a traffic stop, could result in a life being saved.
Angela, I appreciate your take. Thank you so much for being on the show and saying what you're saying, because I completely and wholeheartedly agree with you. You know that. And I think about this officer, 26 years on the force. 26 years. But you can't tell the difference between a taser and a gun. Are we really supposed to believe that? It's somewhat of a rhetorical question because I definitely want to ask you. I know you've heard of that excuse, that rationale before. I'm just wondering how legitimate it is for them to get away with it. I guess that would dissuade a prosecutor from filing murder charges against them, and it could get reduced to manslaughter or something along those lines. That's the only thing that I can imagine. You're the lawyer. You would know better than me, but I'm certainly not buying that excuse, and I don't think anybody in the black community is buying that excuse. Having said all of that, as you see the sports world stand up, take notice, and shine a spotlight on this, not just the players, the athletes themselves, guys like Aaron Hicks for the New York Yankees, who elected not to play yesterday because he played a lot of times in his career in Minnesota, and this just hit him that deeply. Of course, the NBA, the National Hockey League, Major League Baseball, all electing to postpone those games. I'm wondering, when you see something like that transpire, what kind of change do you think ultimately can take place? We can talk about bringing attention to it, but I think these individuals, along with these leagues, in partnership with these leagues, in partnership with people like yourself and others, ultimately have the power or could conjure up the power and the muscle to change laws and affect legislation. Your thoughts about that?
I think you're spot on. You know, when you consider the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act passed the House of Representatives last summer and was just passed again in the House, you have to have, at some point, United States Senate action. There are teams in most of the states that senators come from. They should be having these conversations with the senators. This isn't a matter of a political expediency. It is a matter of life and death for too many people in this country. Stephen, you also know that there are folks who have that same accountability on the local level, on the state level. What types of laws need to be changed so that people can survive? And also, what needs to happen with qualified immunity? So often, police officers are not held responsible. There are no real consequences because there's a thing called qualified immunity. That needs to shift. Before President Biden was elected, he was not for completely reining in qualified or ending qualified immunity. He was only supportive of reining it in. Now we see that even reining it in may not be sufficient. So let's have those conversations. I know there are people who probably play on these teams or own the teams are like, hey, we're not elected officials. This isn't our lane. But once it gets to this point where everybody's lives are impacted, whether it's through the trauma, whether it's because you're related to this person or you think it could be you next or someone in your family, that's when it becomes all of our collective responsibilities. You don't have to have the political experience to say, I know when I see something that is this wrong and it continues to happen all over this country, it's time for a shift. And I think that there are players, there are team owners that because of the amount of money they bring into these states and to these communities that can absolutely have a big, make a big impact and make a big difference. And that's the kind of partnership that we need at this point.
Angela, that's where I want to go right now. And then Stephen A., I'll let you jump back in. But besides protesting or prayers or social media posts, and let's put the athletes aside for a second, just the average person, someone like myself, what can we do to take action right now so there's some sort of accountability?
Yeah, I think the first thing that's really easy is calling 202-224-3121. That's the Capitol Hill switchboard operator. You can call and ask to speak to your senators and tell them that it's time to pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. And you can express all your personal reasons why. Getting to know who your elected officials are in your communities who are supportive of police reform, or in some instances, defunding or divesting resources, reaching out to them and figuring out where there's real partnership. I think the most important thing that people can do is really educate themselves on these issues, not just sitting in your feelings and the frustration and the disappointment. And as you said, in posting something on social media, what are the things that you know you need to understand? What should happen at a traffic stop? How do you talk to your neighbors to make sure that their children are safe if they are people of color and could be at risk? In fact, it's not just people of color who are killed, abused, harassed by the police, but we are disproportionately so. And so how do you ensure that you are sensitive to those things and you align yourself with social movements who are working to combat these very issues every single day?
Also wanted to highlight this as well. I mean, Joe Madison, the Black Eagle on Urban View Radio, Sirius XM Channel 126. I know you know him well. One of the things that I want to applaud him because he's pushed for this on many, many occasions. When you talk about law enforcement issues as it pertains to Black individuals, understand that it's far more pervasive than just, you know, what you see in terms of traffic stops and things of that nature. For example, we've got an Emmett Till anti-lynching bill that was passed by the House, still has not been passed by the Senate. In the year 2021, we're still waiting for an anti-lynching bill to be completely passed and written in the law. So when I think about things like that, it heightens my level of awareness even more so, Angela. And I asked this of you as well. I remember when I talked about the Black Pack and you came on First Take and you were like, wait a minute, we got that going on right now. When you talk about these athletes partnering in concert with the leagues and using their financial muscle and beyond to affect politicians and politics taking place on Capitol Hill. I want you to take the floor and end this segment by just like you gave out that number for the operator with the Senate on Capitol Hill. I want you to take a moment and to remind everybody about those PACs that are out there, those political action committees that are fighting every day, people like yourself and others, to create legislative change on Capitol Hill. What can the players and the leagues themselves, who can they join with? What can they do?
Yeah, so there's several. There's the civil rights organization side, from the NAACP to Black Lives Matter Global Network to Black Futures Lab, that do this work every single day. Some of them have political action committee apparatuses. Others don't, but they're just as effective. You have the Black Pack. You have Collective Pack. We talked about some of these last time. You have the work that Stacey Abrams is doing in Georgia and Nsei Ufo and who else? Oh, my gosh. Latasha Brown from Black Voters Matter, who's a dear sister friend of mine. We can't continue to divorce issues of police brutality, criminal justice reform from voting rights and voter suppression issues. This same fight that's happening in Georgia, every time we begin to exercise our power, there's somebody that comes along and tries to take some of those things back. I think the other thing that we really have to do, Stephen A., and I'm sure you know this well, is also is we have to center our own healing from our own trauma as well. There's a man who wrote this powerful book called My Grandmother's Hands, named Resma Menakem, and he's also in the Minnesota area. The fact that he's helped to train the Minnesota Police Department on understanding what he calls white body supremacy, Black trauma, and police trauma, and how they are dealing with the supremacy in their own bodies based on systemic oppression is another big part of this. That's a whole other segment. But the point that I want to raise is that this work is for all of us to do. It's not just for Black athletes to do. It's not just owners who feel sympathetic to people who play on their teams. It is for all of us to do. And we're not going to do this without moving out of the trauma and finally realizing that Black people are not inherently violent and criminal.
Well, I applaud you for doing the work. And I just want one more time, Angela, thank you again for being with us. And we will have you back and have that conversation. Everyone can follow you on social media. I read your bio before, multi-hyphenate. I had to look down because there's so many things that you've accomplished. But Angela Rye is on Twitter, on Instagram. Follow her. She'll continue to lead you in this direction. But please give us that phone number one more time for folks at home who didn't get a chance and don't have their phone or pen and paper out.
It's 202-224-3121, and you're calling the Capitol switchboard operator. You're asking to speak to your senator. Know who that is. Whatever state you come from, you have to. Unless you're in D.C., that's a whole other battle, but you can get involved in the battle. State it too. Yeah. And then also calling your members of Congress. What legislation do you want them to pass? That is the question. It is the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. It's time.
Thank you, Angela.
Angela Rye, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Breaking news into First Take this morning. Denver, fourth in the West. Some terrible news. Jamal Murray tore his ACL. The team just tweeting this out. He will be out indefinitely. Stephen A., I'll start with you. Kendrick Perkins back here with us. What does this mean for Denver?
Well, I got to tell you, first thing, I was watching the game last night, start to finish, because I was watching that show Steph Curry was putting on. And I'm such a fan of Jamal Murray. I mean, he's such an unsung hero in the game of basketball. This brother shows up and shows out, averaged 26.5 points a game in the postseason last year, shoot 40% from three-point range this year. The brother's a marksman. He can flat-out ball, and my heart goes out to him. I'm just hoping and praying that he gets better, because the game of basketball is better when he's on the court. Having said all of that, my initial reaction is that it's over. Denver's chances of getting to the finals are ruined. But I will tell you this, upon further inspection, just thinking about it a little bit, Jamal Murray averages 16.5 shots a game. Guess who that means more shots for? Jamal Murray being out means more shots for Will Barton, means more shots for Michael Porter. And I believe in both of those brothers. I believe in both of them. And when you combine that with the pickup of Aaron Gordon and the fact that you can choose, because remember, it's only one basketball. And you look at Aaron Gordon, and he just wanted to get out of a losing situation in Orlando. He's been happier than a pig in mud since he's got to Denver, okay? And he's just been playing a role and defending and rebounding and helping out the Joker as much as he possibly can. But when you think about Jamal Murray being out, and it's a devastating loss, and their chances certainly don't improve without him, but do they have the talent to make up for his absence potentially? Yeah, because we've seen Michael Porter ascending, and we know what Barton can do. I wouldn't just rule out Denver. Again, it's a daunting task not to have your man from the perimeter. We know that Joker's the man, period, and then Jamal is number two. But I like Barton. I like Porter. And I like Aaron Gordon on this team. And I wouldn't just dismiss them. That much I will say.
Stephen A., my brother, are you okay this morning?
Yeah.
You all right?
I'm good.
Because I've been seeing you and hearing you talk about people that need to be drug tested immediately. You might need to go take one yourself right now, all right? Because
I'm not going to complain about you for saying that. If I got to go get drug tested, I got to go get drug tested, all right?
Listen, I know it's her. First of all, I want to say, I was watching Steph Curry in the game last night, and he was putting on his show and doing his thing. And when Jamal Murray went down, I said, you know what? I didn't want to say anything, but I said, that's not good. He tore his ACL, because I've been through it. Yeah. And I knew I saw the way that he grabbed his knee.
Yep.
And I saw how he couldn't put no pressure on it. I knew he had tore his ACL just from my experience alone in 2010. Right. But I'm going to say this. The Denver Nuggets now are first round exit, okay? I am not putting any stock whatsoever into Will Barton or Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. has great talent. He has great potential. But he still plays the game with a below average IQ. I mean, watching him play the game of basketball is just very disturbing to me. His shot selection. I mean, in transition, pull-up threes, and just, you know, being a defensive liability. It's just not good to watch. And Will Barton, I haven't seen him in 2 years. I mean, I haven't seen him step up to the plate in 2 years. And I know you got the big fella, big Jokic down low, who possibly could win the MVP this year, MVP candidate, the Larry Bird of this era, like the great Greg Popovich said. But they are a first-round exit, especially in the Western Conference, without Jamal Murray. And to Max's point, man, I know he's going to love this. You cannot get up out of the West, or you cannot win a series without having that dynamic guard at that position to go get you buckets when it mattered when it matters the most. And we saw last year when it mattered the most, when Jamal Murray was going head to head with Donovan Mitchell and giving them, they was going back and forth, and he ended up winning that battle to help them pull away from the Utah Jazz and win that series in seven games. It was because of Jamal Murray. Jokic handled and did his part against Rudy Gobert and took him to the school, put him over his lap, and gave him a good spanking in that series. But they need Jamal Murray. Without Jamal Murray, they are a first-round exit, okay?
Well, I didn't,
Let's make it very clear.
I didn't have them going to the finals anyway, and I'm not going that far. I just don't think they'll be an easy out, particularly in the first round, no matter who they're going against. I don't think they'll be an easy out. That's number one. Number two, in terms of Barton, he is averaging nearly 13 points a game, 43% shooting, 38% from three-point range, and only 10 shots a game. So I'm looking at it from that perspective. I'm looking at it from Porter's perspective, and I'm saying you're going to have to bring your game to go up against them because the Joker is a problem, and him with Aaron Gordon is a problem. I agree with you. I don't have them going to the finals, but I certainly don't look at them as an easy out in the first round, particularly if you're hovering around that fourth or fifth seed, because who knows who you'll be going against at that particular moment in time. Now, again, if you're going against the Lakers and you got a healthy, Anthony Davis and LeBron James that come back later in the season, and they don't mind being a fourth seed, you're right, they're going home in the first round. But everybody else, I don't know. I don't know.
Stephen A., I mean, just think about it. The top four teams in the Western Conference right now
are the Utah Jazz, Clippers, Lakers.
And then the Lakers will probably leap jump the Denver Nuggets. All right. So the Nuggets, at the worst, in my opinion, will fall to number six when it's all said and done. So they'll be probably playing the Phoenix Suns or the Los Angeles Clippers. And I just don't see them even standing a chance without Jamal Murray in the playoff series. Yeah. Not in round one. They'll be sent home.
Yeah. Won't be an easy out, though. Yeah.
All right. Again, just to repeat the news, Jamal Murray out indefinitely. Denver just tweeting it out with a torn ACL.
Yeah,
Kendrick Perkins, always a pleasure, sir.
Hey, Molly,
we will talk to you soon. As Stephen A. puts it, party's over.
I got to get drug tested.
Yes, sir. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Panthers quarterback Sam Darnold addressed his trade from the Jets for the first time publicly yesterday on the Carolina Panthers official site. Take a listen.
Obviously, getting drafted as high as I did, you know, my expectations were to go in there, play 20 years and, you know, win Super Bowls. And, you know, that was the dream going in there. And but obviously it didn't work out. When I heard the news that they wanted to trade me, it was tough. You know, anytime you're not wanted somewhere, that's always, you know, a tough pill to swallow. But then it was the opposite feeling, you know, you go from being unwanted and then all of a sudden, you know, the people in Carolina, you know, wanted me and obviously traded for me.
Sometimes in life, we got to dream a new dream. And we continue with our First Take Draft Blitz by looking at Darnold's former team, which has the number 2 and number 23 picks in the first round. And the Jets are projected to be zeroing in on BYU quarterback Zach Wilson and currently have the number 2 spot in this year's draft. On that note, we bring in Lewis Riddick. Hello, Lewis. Good to see you, sir. I will get to you shortly, but I'm going to start with Stephen A. Stephen A., who do you think has more to prove? Is it Zach Wilson potentially going in there for the Jets or Sam Darnold, who they dealt?
Well, I'm gonna go with Zach Wilson and my brother, Lewis Riddick better agree with me because he don't have his Chippendales outfit on tonight. So I can't get on him. But yeah, so
I'm all,
much.
I'm all business today.
He rocking the Men in Black today. Look. That's he rocking why. The Men in Black look. I understand. Welcome to the party. I'm glad you remember what a tie is. Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you remember what a tie is. All right. Here's the deal, Lewis Riddick. I'm gonna say Zach Wilson for this reason. Sam Darnold was Gates. He was contaminated by the Gates culture. Adam Gates had never had any business being the coach of the New York Jets. We know he regressed, even though they were 7-9 the previous year. He regressed, complete less percentage of his passes, obviously threw for less yards, threw for 11 interceptions, only 11 interceptions. The problem was he only threw for 9 touchdowns, okay? Didn't have a lot of weapons, didn't have schemes, didn't have the right culture. We know that. And so because of that, going to Carolina, when Rule and those boys clearly appear to have a structure in place, even though they need to explain to us why they think Sam Darnold is better than Teddy Bridgewater, then you also got some of the weapons of McCaffrey and Moore and Robbie Anderson, the old teammate of Sam Darnold, all that other stuff. Here's the problem why I put the pressure on Zach Wilson. You came out of BYU. You're going to be the number 2 overall pick. They're putting you ahead of Justin Fields. They're putting you ahead of Trey Lance. They're talking about you. You got folks out there as analysts saying that you're more NFL ready than Trevor Lawrence. I know it's a new coach. I know it's a new coach there with Robert Saleh. I know it's a new system. I get it could be the same old Jets, et cetera, et cetera. But then you also got to take into account the fact that, I mean, from the days of Richard Todd to Mark Sanchez to Chad Pennington before him to Geno Smith after him, and you got Sam Darnold. The reality of the situation is that it shouldn't take that much for you to really establish your mark. If you're that dude, if you're anything close to what they say about you, Zach Wilson, you should be an individual that's seen in very high regard by the New York Jets fan base, by the organization as a whole, because it ain't like you got much to succeed thus far anyway. So I think because of that, along with the fact that they're passing up on Justin Fields, who was supposed to be the number 2 quarterback taken behind Trevor Lawrence, and suddenly he's dipped to number 5, I think with all the bloviating about Zach Wilson, despite being at BYU with the schedule and stuff like that, bottom line is, he got to show up and show that he's worth it. Number 2 overall pick, if he messes up, this is the same old Jets, and they'll be mired in mediocrity and purgatory for the foreseeable future, just as they always have been. Remember, this is a franchise that hasn't won a Super Bowl since 1969.
Yeah, you're dead right, and I agree with you 100%. Look, I think this is a matter of expectations right out of the gate. Look, number 1, he's going to be drafted number 2 overall. Okay, so there are expectations that come with that right out of the gate here. They expect him to be a quote unquote transcendent generational quarterback, etc. When you get drafted that high. Number 2, we, meaning the media, have done a fantastic job of hyping this young man to the point where, you know, one throw that he makes in a pro day is looked at as being something that no one else has ever done in the history of football. And yep. We blow that up and blow that up and blow that up to the point where now the expectations have gotten even higher. Then you have the comparisons. This guy, I don't want to say it. I mean, this is what people are saying. And you know what? I'm not going to knock him for saying it. But you've heard people say, I don't want to make this comparison, but he reminds me a little bit of Patrick Mahomes. He reminds me a little bit of Aaron Rodgers. So what do you think the Jet fan base is thinking right now? They're like, well, look, we already know Sam. We're not even though they don't pay any attention to the fact that Sam came into one of the worst possible situations over his 3 years in New York that he possibly could come into, they still feel as though it's all was on him and he just stinks and we just need to ship him out the door and move him on down the line and bring in the next guy. So now they're thinking that Zach Wilson is the absolute savior. Number 4, here's what he's coming into in this situation now. He's coming into a situation where Robert Saleh is a legit assistant coach who is a legit coordinator who now we are hoping is going to be a legit head coach. Who is he bringing in? He's bringing in Mike LaFleur with him from San Francisco, who does what? He runs Kyle Shanahan's offense, which is considered what? the ultimate quarterback-friendly offense. So he automatically is coming into a place where now there's a lot more structure and a lot more chance for him to succeed right out of the gate. And they already have a better football team around him than what Sam ever had. So just stack all that stuff up on top of it. The individual pressure we put on him, the fact that he is the number two overall pick, the fact that he's coming into an organization now that is resetting once again and selling to the everyone that it's this is the one. This is the regime that's going to get it turned around. Of course there's more pressure on him. Sam, right now, nobody expects him to do anything. Nothing. And that's exactly how he should want it. He should want expectations to be lowered because he's going to a better situation. Matt Rhule's a fantastic head coach. Joe Brady's going to be a head coach here very soon, the offensive coordinator in Carolina. I heard what you said about the fact that, you know, they need to give us some explanation as to why they think he's better than Teddy Bridgewater. That'll play itself out over the offseason and during training camp. We'll see if that, in fact, is the case. I believe it is. I believe Sam gives them incrementally more playmaking ability than Teddy, but we'll see. So for Sam's sitting pretty right now. It's Zach Wilson that has a lot of questions to answer and a lot of expectations to fulfill. Hey, but that's what comes with the territory when you're a number two overall pick.
Let's not forget also that if you're Sam Darnold, when all else fails, you can always dip and dunk it to Christian McCaffrey, who's coming back this year.
Yep.
That also diminishes the level of pressure that you're going to have on him. You've got a familiar guy in Robbie Anderson. DJ Moore is no scrub, but then you've got the great Christian McCaffrey to dip the ball to. And when you have that safety blanket, that also minimizes the pressure.
Yeah, and they're sitting in a spot right now where they're going to get a good wide receiver. They can get a tremendous playmaker. Or Matt could trade down in the draft because someone's going to try and move up into his spot at number eight and get a quarterback because people feel as though maybe they have to jump over Denver at number nine because they could be sitting in a position to draft a guy like Justin Fields if, in fact, he does slide. And they could just go ahead and kind of really collect a whole, you know, treasure chest full of draft picks and just continue to build out what is a pretty solid fundamental base as far as a football team is concerned down there in Carolina. Look, Sam's sitting pretty. I think he's going to rebound. I'm not going to say all of a sudden he's going to become the guy who was worthy of being the number three overall pick and he's going to become an all-pro, but he's in a hell of a lot better situation than he ever was in New York. And no matter what New York Jets fans want to say about the fact that Sam stunk and he's stunking up on his own, you know better. You know better than to say
Just
put it all on that young man's shoulders.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He's one of the best running backs ever, a Heisman Trophy winner for the Buckeyes, a four-time NFL Pro Bowler for the Tennessee Titans, and now he adds head football coach of Tennessee State's football program to his resume. I also want to add Broadway actor because Stephen A. Smith is also a thespian. Eddie George joining us now. Eddie, great to see you. I love the three-piece, the colors. Congratulations, sir. Just adding another thing to your resume, another challenge. But tell me this. You've accomplished so much. You've worn worn so many hats. How long has it been on your heart to transition to coaching, and why was Tennessee State the right fit?
Well, honestly, about 6 months ago, coaching wasn't on the forefront of my mind. I was presented with this opportunity by Dr. Allen and Dr. Glover here at Tennessee State, and I thought they were crazy at first. But when I really searched my heart, did my due diligence in terms of where I'm at in my life, and really looked at what Deion was able to do down in Jackson State, the energy that he provided, the resources immediately to HBCUs, and living in this community for well over 25 years and well aware of Tennessee State's rich history, I said, you know, this could be a wonderful opportunity, and here we are.
You know, man, you had to do something because you certainly couldn't stand around getting your jerseys retired. You got your number 27 retired by Ohio State. You got your number 27 retired by Tennessee, okay? I mean, we know all of this, Mr. Heisman Trophy winner and All-American and everything like that. But I got to ask you this question. You know, you said it wasn't on your mind, on your heart. Are you talking about the job or coaching overall? Is coaching something that you truly, truly want to do, or is this something that just found you in recent memory?
I think it's a little bit of both, Stephen A. You know, throughout my entire life, although I haven't been in football coaching, I've been coaching outside of football. I have my own wealth management business, preaching, talking about financial literacy. I was teaching at Ohio State the business of professional sports for 5 years, you know, through the business school of Fisher Business School of Business, Fisher School of Business at Ohio State. So my entire life, I've always been a mentor. Now it brings it back full circle to football, and it just spoke to me. I mean, it's not a situation where I say, hey, the next 5 years, I want to get back into coaching. The opportunity presented itself. I did my due diligence. And once I went through that process, I found on the other side, man, this could be really fun, a lot of joy, but I'll make a huge impact in a lot of kids' lives in the community and really have an all boots arise mentality when it comes to an opportunity like this if it's done correctly. So I'm very excited about it. Everything that I've done up until this point, being on Broadway, all of this stuff has gotten me prepared for this opportunity, and I'm going to meet it head on.
Eddie, you know enough about me to know how much HBCUs mean to me. I'm a grad of Winston-Salem State University and proud to see my man primetime Deion Sanders down at Jackson State. And it's one thing to talk about what you guys and guys like yourself can do for an HBCU. As accomplished as you are and the level of cachet that you bring to such a university by joining an HBCU. But as a black man that's accomplished so much, knowing the history of HBCUs and some of the struggle, what does it do for you to be the face and the head of this HBCU football program?
You know, it's fulfilling, honestly. It's a legacy opportunity. I believe that a head coach, is his number one job is to serve. And that's where I'm at in my life. And to come back to this community, to be here and to see the struggles over the last few years with the program and where they're trying to go, is truly remarkable. Listen, we have some great leadership with Dr. Glover and Dr. Allen. He has a big vision, a big dream of what this could be. I see the potential. The bones of success are here at Tennessee State University. Nashville, Tennessee is one of the best cities in the world, according to Forbes magazine, to come to. We have Tennessee State here that offers so much. So, you know, I'm just really excited about the opportunity and really show men of color, you know, what we can do, what's possible. You know, I left the gridiron and I went to Broadway and I got businesses. So you can do everything you choose to do with the proper focus, the right attitude, and the right amount of effort. And I'm really looking forward to getting entrenched in the student body and the culture of Tennessee State and really taking this proud program to another level.
I know one school I'm going to be speaking at in the very near future. I got to come down there and talk to the players. Before I let you get on out of here real quick, Eddie George, let me transition for a quick second. You went to The Ohio State.
That's right.
The Ohio State had a quarterback, Justin Fields. He's supposed to be the number two overall pick right behind Trevor Lawrence. That appears like it's not going to be the case, that he suddenly dropped to number four or five, they got Lawrence and Wilson and Trey Lance and Mac Jones ahead of him, and then him. Your thoughts about that real quickly, sir.
Listen, it's not how you start, Stephen A., it's how you finish. And to be quite honest with you, I feel like if he gets in the right organization, maybe the Patriots, he can really thrive. Listen, you know, let's be honest. You go to the Jets, you kind of know what you're going to get. You know, everything starts at the top. I believe Justin Fields has a unique arm. He has a great skill set. And this is going to add more fuel to his fire. And I can't wait to see what he's going to do once he gets to the next level. I had a chance to talk to him a couple times. He's a young man that's focused. He's a student of the game. And he's an exceptional leader. And I have no doubt wherever he goes, he's going to shine.
Eddie, one more thing before we let you roll, because I found it very interesting. When you talked about mentoring, I was reading that Derrick Henry really credited you being his mentor when he had that breakout year in 2018, and he's obviously one of the best running backs in the game right now, so I just wanted to mention that. But also, I'm looking at your coaching staff here, and apparently you're working on getting some pretty big names. Is that true? Because that's the rumor on the street, and I'm just wondering what your pitch might be to some of these folks like a Ray Lewis and a Hugh Jackson.
Well, right now I'm going to go and interview the current staff and see what's here, see what's needed. There's a lot of speculation of what's out there in terms of who's going to be on my coaching staff. I have a lot of guys to get through to get to that point, but I can guarantee you this, we're going to bring in the best teachers, the best men of character that's going to raise the level of play both for these young men on and off the football field. So I'm really excited about what that looks like moving forward, but I'll keep you posted.
All right. Thank you so much for the time, Eddie. Appreciate it. Best of luck.
Thank you.
All right. Take care now. All right, guys. We'll get back here. And the Twins, Timberwolves, and Wild all postponed games Monday following the police shooting of a 20-year-old Dante Wright, who was killed during a traffic stop in the Minneapolis suburb of Brooklyn Center Sunday night. We bring back Lewis Riddick to the show. Lewis, I want to start with you here because we haven't had a chance to hear from you. What was your reaction to how the teams handled this tragedy?
Look, I wasn't shocked, Molly. I mean, look, I think there's just a lot of exasperation, a lot of frustration, a lot of dejection, and just flat out disappointment and wondering as to when does this cycle end? When does it become something that stays at the forefront of conversation as far as the treatment of law enforcement in relationship to African-American individuals when they get stopped in routine traffic stops like this, or not in routine traffic stops like this, but in traffic stops overall, and whenever there's interaction between law enforcement and African-Americans, when does it get to the point where we don't see this become a part of the regular news cycle where people are being murdered, and people are being murdered in situations where, you know, police officers say, well, I thought I was reaching for my taser, but in fact, I had my gun, and then a young man loses his life unnecessarily. When does that kind of thing start to become the exception instead of almost becoming the norm? And I think people are just exhausted. They're just flat out exhausted about, and the only way sometimes that you can keep this kind of conversation in the forefront or at the forefront of people's minds is when you do things in order to that disrupts their normal way of going about business and going about their life and just allows them to go ahead and put that kind of thing to the side and just keep on moving. And that's, you know, and then, you know, you quickly, like for myself, I quickly kind of, you know, just start thinking about what does this mean for me? What does this mean for my young son when he gets older? What does it mean for me when I go out in my own car? And, you know, maybe somehow, some way I wind up getting pulled over, whether it be, you know, for some kind of moving violation, whether it be not having your turn signal on or, you know, speeding or whatever. How's it going to end for me? How's it going to end for me when I do everything the right way and comply with what officers are telling me, but because of some mistake that maybe they commit that I wind up being a statistic as well. And then my family has to deal with that kind of situation the same way all these young men across the country, their families are having to deal with these situations that are, quite frankly, obviously very unnecessary, but they just keep getting pushed to the wayside and we just keep moving on with our lives. I think that level of exhaustion is obviously very apparent. I think obviously sports teams have a very, very prominent place in our society and have a huge platform by which they can you know, bring attention to these kind of situations, and they should do so anytime they get a chance to. I understand that there are people who believe as though you should separate, you know, these kind of things from sports, and people think that sports should just be here for our entertainment and our way to escape things. But, you know, the thing that people need to remember is sports are played by individuals as well who are also members of society who many times are facing some of the same kind of situations that these people who you are seeing in the news are facing, and they could wind up being a statistic just as easily as anyone else. Yeah. So, I mean, it is what it is. And I don't mean to say that flippantly, but it is what it is. And they should do what they're doing right now. And this is, should be something that does stay on the forefront of people's mind and at the forefront of people's conversation. Because you know what? I think, I think Doc Rivers and others have really articulated this fact. This is something that this cannot be ignored and cannot just, you know, fall out of the news cycle, because something needs to change. And I know that sounds, you know, very generic, but this is getting ridiculous.
Well, it is ridiculous, Lewis. And I started off, I don't know if you saw me at the top of the show, but, you know, and I'll paraphrase it by saying, you know, somewhat, you know, what I said earlier. At some point in time, police officers are going to have to explain to me, you, and every black person in America, because we know it's inexplicable. We know they couldn't do it. But somehow, some way, how is it that a non-black individual shoots and kills 10 people in Colorado and he's arrested?
Mm-hmm.
How is it that Dylann Roof walks into a church in South Carolina and shoots 9 people in prayer? There's a nationwide manhunt for him. He is found. He is arrested, not shot. And you stop him at a Burger King on the way back to the police station. Somebody's going to have to explain how there are a litany of situations where we have literally witnessed people shooting back at police officers and they end up alive. But unarmed black men are ending up dead. And so to me, mm-hmm. where you don't want to castigate the entire law enforcement community because there's good and bad in everything, and obviously the actions of a few shouldn't taint the many, it's almost inescapable to do so, because when you have an officer who, by the way, heads the police union, I mean, she heads the police union. You have been an officer for 26 years and your excuse is you mistakenly grabbed your gun. You thought it was a taser after 26 years on the force. And on top of it all, you're the one training other officers too. I mean, you just look at it and you just say, this is unbelievable. This is absolutely unbelievable. But ultimately, it comes down to this. Black people have been demonized to such a large degree that evidently it's okay to look at them with fright. Look at us as if we are the problem and we are the one endangering you. And as a result, mm-hmm. it justifies you doing something. The demonization of black people, particularly black men, is obviously at the heart of this matter when it comes to law enforcement officials. And we've got to do something about it. It's just that simple. It's just that simple.
Yeah, I could not agree
not
more.
The women
and
as
that,
well.
That
course,
is
the
why
tragedy of what happened
every
to
time I get
Breonna
in my
Taylor.
Car.
Go ahead, Lewis.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just going to say, that's why every time I get in my car and I leave my house, believe me, it's just a whole different world. It's a whole different mindset you got to have now. And that's it shouldn't be like that. Shouldn't be like that.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today. The number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.